Through musical thunder from one of God's greatest and most gifted natural wonders as we move further into a new millennium.
And as we move up to the 8 o'clock hour, you're in tune with radio station WBAI in New York, where every Tuesday night at this time, it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bond for the best.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Manuel Goldstein here with you. Isaac over there.
Hi.
Mike over on the other side of the room.
Hello.
And other assorted people straggling around. And it's Halloween. And, okay, let's do this right away. We have one remaining H2K t-shirt that's just lying around. 212-209-2900. The first person who can call up and identify this piece of music gets it. 212-209-2900. Who is this? We have a winner, so stop calling. I think the it was technically the first caller that got it right, right?
Yes.
Because the first caller was just a crank call, I think.
Well, it was someone who wanted to talk about something else that I really didn't care about.
Wasn't paying any attention to what we were saying, so they called to say something completely different. And it wasn't Rebel either. But the first person who called up with a guess or with an educated guess got it right. Those are, of course, the Shags. And you either feel passionately about them one way or another, but you either love them or you hate them. I happen to love them. I happen to play them all the time. Yes, I'm admitting it. And you know, one day I'd love to use one of those songs in a film. I just think it would be so great.
You're going to have to build a film all around the song,
obviously, because you can't
fit anything.
It's not background music, which is why we couldn't talk while that was playing. But who's our lucky winner?
That would be Jay here from the beautiful city of New York.
New York City, great, yeah. Great.
Lower East End.
All right, and that Shag song, of course, comes in honor of Halloween. That's from the late 60s, early 70s, so I don't think they're still active as far as music anyway. Yes, Halloween. Well, it's an appropriate day because this is kind of a scary occasion because of all the things that are going on. In fact, you might even say that... I saw Babylon 5 last night. There was a quote on there that I just thought was so appropriate from the character Jakar. Weep for the future. Weep for us all.
This is the universe. Big, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it's alive, all right. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act, of course, is what we're talking about. Yeah, we're still talking about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act because it just won't die. In fact, it's getting more and more life. Within the last few days, you may notice that this is the end of October, it being Halloween. We've been telling people about this for several months, that the rest of the DMCA is something that that could be really dangerous. Well, the United States Copyright Office Friday endorsed a new federal law making it illegal to break the technological safeguards for each copyrighted works that are stored and distributed in digital form. Now, what this means, it means that basically in addition to what we were sued under, which made it illegal to distribute certain tools, it is now illegal for you to even create such a tool, for you to circumvent access control. If you're able to figure out how to make that DVD of yours skip those commercials, you've just broken a law. You look incredulous, Isaac, but it's true. And why isn't your mic not working? Because I put the wrong one up. Go ahead.
Yes, it's very scary stuff.
It is.
You know, imagine buying a car and not being allowed to pop the hood open.
It's really frightening. The ruling was a defeat for several constituencies, including the American public, as well as universities, libraries, computer programmers, who had argued that the law should preserve traditional rights to archive and lend out copyrighted material or to use so-called reverse engineering to understand how a piece of technology works. Unbelievable. Media companies, including Sony and Time Warner, had argued that the statute was necessary to protect their digital material, like computer games and movies, from widespread unauthorized use. But groups like the Association of American Universities, the American Library Association, and the Commerce Department's National Telecommunications and Information Administration maintained that broad exemptions were necessary to preserve the fair use rights of individuals. Basically, they said that there are a lot of people who wrote in. We read some of them on the air a few months ago. A lot of our listeners wrote in explaining why fair use was important, why DVDs should not be crippled in this way, and why the whole case that was against us was just a big waste of time. But the Copyright Office said repeatedly in its ruling that the proponents of these kinds of exemptions had not demonstrated evidence that there would be substantial harm if an exemption was not granted. I don't know what they want.
Shouldn't it be the other way around?
Yeah, you would think so.
So that those who are seeking these kinds of restrictions should prove that there would not be any harm to the...
It's insane.
Sorry, here I am
thinking... No, it's like the world has gone crazy, and I really, I'm kind of in shock here. What we're looking at right now is penalties, statutory damages, for gaining access. Now, listen to the phrasing of this. Gaining access to a piece of copyrighted material secured by computer code. The civil statutory damages range from $200 to $2,500. Criminal penalties include fines of as much as $1 million or 10 years in jail for repeat offenses. Now, gaining access to a piece of copyrighted material secured by computer code. Do you have any idea how many things that encompasses? I mean, you can do this without even leaving your home. You can do this without accessing anything outside of your four walls. Simply by figuring out how something is encoded, figuring out how to get around something, how to play that DVD without seeing the commercials of the FBI warning. It's now illegal. You can go to jail for it. I mean, how do you respond to something like that?
Quite easily. I intend to send an email to the Copyright Office. I'm going to encode it with ROT26. And when they read it, it will be subject to these criminal actions.
Great. You're gonna send the cop over to enforce it?
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Every intention of doing so.
We've already gotten some listener feedback on this, even though we haven't talked about it yet. I'm sure you've got this already. I wanted to put in my two cents. This review decision, or whatever it's called, shoots down all the legitimate qualms we have with the DMCA regarding DVDs, and it does so quite poorly. For one thing, they say that we haven't shown that we have been harmed or substantially adversely affected. They say that since it's only an inconvenience to us and doesn't actually harm us, it's okay. Two problems with that. First, they're wrong. I consider an inconvenience, especially in this situation, to be actual harm and adverse effect. And second, their solutions to this inconvenience involve spending more money. I count three examples of this, but there may be more. Buying the movie in VHS format. Buying a PAL converter. I don't know why this is included, as it applies only to analog as far as I know. And three, buying a player made for a different region code. These are all ridiculous, especially the last one. What if I have a DVD from every region? There are six or eight regions, I think, so according to this, I would need up to eight DVD players. I consider having to spend more money than necessary in actual harm and adverse effect. Also, I thought I'd highlight one thing they said about halfway through the report. There is no unqualified right to access works on any particular machine or device of the user's choosing. I thought if I owned something, I could do anything except distribute copies of it. I guess now I can only do what the works creator want me to do.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? You just put that needle in what is known as my flip side. I won't be able to sit down for a week.
How could I possibly? You know, that's fair use. That's fair use. When Big Ol' Dynamite put that out and used that Alfred Hitchcock quote, maybe out of context a little bit.
Oh, I would imagine just a touch.
They probably couldn't do that today. They'd probably get in a lot of trouble. The whole region code argument is ridiculous. I can't pick out a portion to highlight for you because the whole part is crazy. This one in particular pisses me off because I own a foreign DVD, Region 2 Fight Club specifically, and I have to be careful how often I play it because I can only change regions 5 times. I just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense, and it's obvious to me that they're in bed with the MPAA and their bias shines through in most of all their arguments. The only recourse I can see is talking to one of my congressmen and explaining the situation because this report seemed to say, if you want real change, it has to be from Congress.
Yep.
Well, you know you have an election coming up in a week, too. You might want to take that into consideration, see who... pretty much anyone in power has voted for this thing already. So you might just want to consider that. You might want to consider all the people that are in there right now that don't seem to care about such things as fair use. Now, I have something interesting here. This is from when I went up to Cambridge and met face-to-face with the evil Jack Valente, the head of the Motion Picture Association of America. Thanks to fellow broadcaster Dave Goodman over at WMBR in Cambridge, we got a copy of this on cassette.
Ooh.
And we can actually listen to how the whole thing transpired. You know, it's basically me asking him some questions, and you'll hear the way he kind of ducks the whole issue. And you also hear some other questions by the moderator and the opposing lawyer on the other side. So let's listen to this for a couple of minutes, and then we'll be back with some more sobering news and phone calls and things like that. Stay tuned. You know, I'm going to make the same mistake I made last week. Yeah, okay. It's not cassette one. It's cassette two. All right, here we go. It would help to turn it on, too, I guess. Okay.
Hi, my name is Manuel Goldstein from 2600 Magazine. I don't know if you know me, Mr.
Yes.
Valente.
But you're an MBA defendant, right? All right, but you were.
You guys just won a big lawsuit against us. Congratulations. it's cost the Electronic Frontier Foundation about $1 million so far. I know it's cost you guys about $4 million. I know you tried to make us pay for that, but the judge didn't want to do that. My question, though, basically it revolves around conceptions, because while I lost the lawsuit, I don't think I've yet learned the lesson, because I thought I knew what a thief was. I thought a thief was someone who stole something with intent to steal something, but I learned that it's not necessarily that way, that a thief is actually somebody who writes software that can be used by somebody who wants to steal something. And then I learned that not only is the person who writes the software a thief, but somebody who calls attention to the software is also considered a thief. Because at 2600, that's what we did. We had a website that pointed to the program or the source code that was used by someone to play a DVD on a Linux system, which was interpreted by the MPAA as thievery. I'm just a little confused as to how many different levels this can go to. With the help of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which I'd also like to know why I shouldn't be scared to death of this thing, it seems that any time somebody tries to figure out technology, they can be guilty of thievery if it's ruled that they shouldn't try to figure that out. I'd also like to know, I saw at the trial, I saw people outside the courtroom, literally across the street, selling videotapes of movies that had just come out that day. And we told MPAA people this, the lawyers on their side, we told the media this, and nobody cared. And those people are still there to this day. And somehow I'm a thief. So just clear up my confusion, please. Thank you.
What was the question?
Well, the question is, how is somebody who publishes information on a website about a computer program that shows how encryption has been hacked is a thief?
Well, I suggest you read Judge Kaplan's decision.
Oh, I'm very familiar with it.
Well,
if he was here, I'd be asking him the same question. But
again,
since most of it was word for word what you guys said, I'd like to know the answer.
You know what? It's the American judicial system at work. He looked at reverse engineering. He looked at security. He looked at fair use. He threw them all out the window. Said they had no bearing. They violated the DMCA. You cannot circumvent encryption. That's the law of the land. Now, if you want to change the law, you have to go to Congress to do it. Unable, I don't have a vote in Congress.
Well, the DMCA did change the law. And that's the thing.
Well, that's right.
Congress voted on this with an unwritten vote, a voice vote, unanimous, everybody agrees that you cannot circumvent encryption anymore. And I'd just like to know why it's so important to control how people use technology. Why is it important that I not be able to skip over commercials on a DVD? Why is it important that in the future with HDTV that the same kind of controls be in place for recording programs and for playing back programs? I don't think a lot of people are aware of this yet, but that is what is going to happen. And the DMCA is what's going to make it possible. I'd just like to know what the intent behind this was. I mean, wasn't it good enough already before for you guys? I mean,
well, I'm glad you. I skip over commercials all the time.
Well, you won't be able to, and if you try, you'll be breaking the law.
That's my little controller. I'm saying again to you, no laws are lapidary. They're there to be changed or revised if the circumstances benefit the majority of the American people. So I'm saying if you have a quarrel with the DMCA.
So, Jack, sorry, behind you. Let me just ask to focus it a little bit.
Do you think it's been unfocused, according to...
Do you have a personal view on the issue? Do you have a view on the issue if Congress were to ask you, they're going to say, Jack, you tell us, what do you think? And we'll follow your lead. What advice would you render to the Congress about
keep the DMCA in place.
And if they said why, what would you say?
I would say it's in the long-term interest of the American people for copyright and the rights of authors, creative people, to make sure that their property is protected from the unauthorized use of that property. That's my simple answer.
Well, I am an author, and I do create things. And in fact, I just made a film, and I've never had the desire to tell people where, when, how they can view my work and what will happen to them if they try to do something else.
If you say I want my work to be offered to the world without compensation, may the Lord bless you, may Allah praise you, go on.
But Jack, wait, there's a big difference between saying you should have the right to exercise perfect control over the use of the content and saying you should have a right to be paid. I personally don't think that people ought to be able to get things for free in the sense of zero cost, not in Richard Stallman's view, not in the sense of free beer. That's not what's important to me. What's important to me is free in the sense of free speech, in Stallman's words, free in the sense of being able to be used in any way that the person wants to use it. Now, I think the real thrust of the question, the excellent point of the question, is this perversion of the language that's going on in this debate, to call this theft. I don't think you sort of brought the biggest part of it out. What happened in the DVD case? DVDs are technologies that have a bit of code called CSS that encrypts the DVD movie so that only on authorized players can you play it. DCSS is a bit of code that cracks that encryption system. To what end? It's not as if the objective or any evidence was offered that the people who were prosecuted in this case were taking DVD movies and, quote, pirating them. They weren't distributing anything illegally. What it did was make it possible for someone with a Linux computer to take the disk and put it in their computer and play it, a disk which they presumably bought. So where's the theft in that story? Where's the pirating in that story? What's happened is Washington speak has transformed people's ability to use copyrighted material in ways different from Hollywood's desire into what's so simple for everybody to understand, the American way of protecting private property. But it isn't that. That's the point. It's not theft. It's about free use of the content. And what's the complaint that you have that somebody plays this on a Linux machine?
Well, when you say Hollywood, let's understand what we're talking about. We're talking about 95,000 members of the Screen Actors Guild, 10,000 members of the Writers Guild, 9,000 members of the Directors Guild. We're talking about all the people who work in the movie industry. There are many creative people, and they believe, and I think not without some reason, that their property, in which they make a living off of, ought not be devoured or used in a way that they don't approve of. It's their property.
It's not property, Jack.
It's just
not property. It's not property in any sense of what we ordinarily mean, and no justification exists for protecting it as you protect your car.
Now,
if you don't have a fair use right to use my car, that's right. You have no right to get into my car and drive it around the block and say, oh, I'm just taking advantage of your car without my permission. That's what we talk about when we talk about property. Intellectual, quote, property is not that. The very same Constitution that gives Congress the power to set up, restricts Congress by saying, if Congress takes property, it must pay for the taking of the property. That's in the Constitution. In the Fifth Amendment,
right? I know about it.
The very same Constitution says Congress cannot create what you call intellectual property unless it guarantees that after a limited time, it gets turned over to the public. The very same Constitution says you must turn it over to the public. four limited times. Now, in the first 100 years of Congress's life, they changed the term of copyright once. And in the second 50 years, in the next 50 years, they changed it once again. In my lifetime, they've changed the term of copyright 11 times under the limited times clause. Every time Mickey Mouse is about to fall into the public domain, magically, there's some excuse. The Europeans made us do it for extending the term of copyright. Now, how is that consistent with this requirement?
Well, if you let me answer you, I will. I'll give you two answers. Answer number one is the word limited. Now, what do you suppose that the founding fathers put on there? If they wanted to say 14 years, they would have said it, correct? They said limited. Now, we can say that depends on what the word is, but limited time could mean 90 years or it could be 5 years. Second, and I think...
1,000 years? Is that a limited time?
Just pick a number. You're doing the same thing. You picked out 14.
Well,
I'll
actually,
pick
you... The
no,
Congressman
let me,
Bono...
Let me get my other answer to you. If you believe you're right and you're a distinguished professor of law, and when I go to law school, I would like to have you teach me, why is it that every court that has confronted this issue takes issue with you?
Only one has, and we're appealing their decision on Thursday.
Well, I think there's several courts. Listen, if some court, if the Ninth Circuit overturns Napster, so be it. Then we'll just have to figure out something else.
But, Jack,
but right now, every court that has examined this issue from all of its aspects has taken issue with it.
In the introduction of the Copyright Term Extension Act, the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act, Mary Bono, Congressman Bono, said that you had proposed a copyright term of forever minus a day. Is that limited times?
Limited means a specific amount of time. Uh-huh. And that's what the Congress has done, Larry. Mm-hmm.
Is that a limited time, though?
I beg your pardon?
Is forever minus a day a limited time?
I said earlier that I didn't think any law is lapidary. The Constitution has been, what, almost 27 times has been amended. And that's what this free and loving land does from
but
time
we
to
haven't
time.
Amended this part of the Constitution yet.
No,
so I want to know, is that a limited time?
Well, I'm not clear what you're saying. I want to get back to...
Okay, that was that was a repeating theme, Jack Valenti, not being clear what people were saying. But boy, that was a lively discussion that went on for about an hour and a half or so, and that was my confrontation with Jack Valenti. What do you think, Isaac? You were laughing hysterically before.
There were parts in there that were pretty funny.
There's some priceless gems, but also pretty damn scary too. When you think that the things he's saying actually are coming to be, and
it gives
the weight of law behind them.
It's somewhat disquieting that he genuinely does not understand what the intent of copyright law is, mm-hmm. and just how far it was meant to go.
How was he wrong as far as the intent of copyright law?
Well, all right, you want to go way back to the Jeffersonian understanding? Or?
Just in a couple of sentences. We don't have to do a whole American history thing here.
Well, it's an important thing to do if you actually want to understand what's going on. Jefferson was originally all for having no such thing as copyright. Mm-hmm. He was one of the dissenting members of some of the first people who were...
That's right. He's even quoted in 2600 this issue as saying just that.
But he basically got smacked on the back of the head and realized that it's necessary to protect the interest of the author so as to compel him to continue to write, or just about any artist. If you have to give him some brief period in which he can monopolize his work, so he can manage to continue his work later on. So he said somewhere on the order of 5 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to have jumped from 15 years to 30 years to 50 years to 75 years to the lifetime of the author, which I thought was always really amusing, because the idea of copyright is to compel the author to continue writing his works. The man is dead.
Mm-hmm.
How does a continued monopoly over his work, you know, up until the point where he is dead, give him the means by which he can continue to produce his work. He can't. Turned into 75 years after he's dead.
What I find amazing is that Jack Valenti goes up there and says that this is to protect the author, the creative person.
Yes.
And, 19 times out of 20, they're not the ones that have any control over their work at all. Probably a lot more than that.
Well, he's
talking for the motion picture industry's interest, not for the author, for the creative people, for the business aspect.
But the creative people did, in fact, monopolize on their creation and sold it, and that was their exercising their copyright.
Well, I'd like to know of a single. I'm sure there are some very successful musicians that are able to hold on to their. Well, when I see David Bowie songs being used for stock trades and John Lennon songs being used to sell telephone systems, you have to wonder. The most successful musicians don't always seem to maintain control over their artwork, and it winds up in the hands of big business. Now, these are the people he should just be honest about that and say, those are the interests we're protecting. It's not the artists. It's not these creative people, because I don't see them coming up and testifying. Unless they have the backing of big business behind them, unless there's somebody who's already way up there, like Metallica, I don't see, new artists saying that we need these kind of controls to protect their interests.
Well, pause a moment for your David Bowie argument. Mm-hmm. You seem to think that Mr. Bowie is upset that his work is being used in specific ways.
I don't know. I don't think he has any control over it. I don't think he owns his music anymore.
Okay. Well, that's a...
But that's the point. The point is, the way Valenti... poses this whole premise is that these artists are the ones being victimized because their work is under their control, but it's being taken by these roving bands of pirates that are going around copying everything. And that's not the case at all, because they no longer even have rights to their own works. It's not even their own work in the eyes of business. So I don't know. I think the whole industry is really pretty messed up to start with.
Well, it's an industry that was based on allowing individuals to allow themselves to collect on their works. This is an industry based on copyright law,
but
which was supposed to be for the individual to continue to go about his artistry.
But let us not delude ourselves and say that DMCA is there to protect artists, because it is not there to protect artists. I fail to see that in any conception. It's
there to protect the copyright holder.
The copyright holder, correct.
Whether it be the artist or whoever happens to own the copyright.
Well,
after
in the case of films and
it's called first sale.
And mass market music, it's very rarely the artist that has control over that.
Which is their choice.
Well, I don't know.
$5 million to make your single onto.
You might want to get Courtney Love in
platinum.
Here and have her tell us if it's their choice.
I don't
want
to hear Courtney Love.
She's going to be so hurt to hear that.
Well, fine.
She's in the other room.
Well, you didn't see after her? The show, we can meet and talk, but I really have no interest in listening to her rant for 45
She's editing in the other
minutes.
Room. She can, okay, well, we'll talk to her afterwards. But a couple other things. I'm going to take some phone calls, 212-209-2900 on this and other issues. Hear about the case of the cyber squatter being told to give up his AltaVista sites. Basically, sites known as ActaVista, AliaVista, AltaVista, and AntaVista are registered in bad faith, according to the UN's WIPO panel. And they said that this guy who has addresses in Panama and Latvia must give up 43 domain names.
Is he the one who has AtlaVista, A-T-L-A-V-I-S-T-A?
Yeah, I think that's one of the
best. I've been there a few times.
How about Hasta La Vista?
I don't know. I don't see
They're a whole different ball
of
wax.
That's a whole different thing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, basically, they're saying that the Geneva-based World Intellectual Property Organization, which runs an arbitration system to evict cyber squatters or net users who register famous names in the hope of making a quick buck, they said the names were confusingly similar to the AltaVista trademark. And apparently that was enough right there.
Well, how can you argue that, A-L-T-A-V-S-I-T-A is something that someone would try to visit other than trying to trap someone by making a typo?
Well, okay, does that mean that we're entitled to 260.com and 26,000.com?
No, I don't think you're entitled to them. I think you should be registering them and making sure that you continue to own them. Otherwise, someone else can grab them.
Are you saying that if you have a long name, you have to register every possible typo that you could... I mean, do you know how many names that is? Do you know how much money the
registrars
will make?
If it really bothers you, you should be going about that.
No, let other people do it and then sue them.
Okay.
Well, that's a different tactic, yeah.
What happens if somebody else does it? Somebody else... registers it instead. The only thing I think they should be held accountable for is if they pretend that they're you, period. If they're not pretending they're you, what's the problem? Someone obviously types something. It's the whole thing with the Guinness Records site that we have.
Mm-hmm.
It's spelled with one N instead of two. Theirs is spelled with two N's. Ours is spelled with one. We make it clear we're not them. It's a parody site. We're you know, we registered it to make a point. And, of course, now they're trying to use legal means to pry it from our hands. But regardless of what WIPO says, I believe parody is a protected thing. And you can spell something similarly to make it look the same. But you shouldn't try and make people think that they're someplace they're not. And I don't think we were trying to do that. Oh, and by the way, we didn't get to talk about this last week. This is something that happened 2 weeks ago. But General Motors has now joined the list of people that are threatening us with lawsuits based on
what
one of our sites.
Now?
Well, it's this site that we just had lying around. It's got the nasty four-letter word followed by generalmotors.com. And they say that's a dilution of their trademark. Now, I really doubt that they were going to use that site, you know, to further their trademark. And I think it's pretty obvious that such a site with a four-letter word in front of their name is there to criticize them or to, you know, say, have a complaint line, you know, whatever you might want to put on a sign like that. It's similar to generalmotorssucks.com, which we don't
well,
have. By
well, that. I think that they wanted to register trucks, generalmotors.com, and it was confusingly similar.
Yeah, whatever. But the point is... The point is,
that's
you know,
a two-point excuse. I like
can,
that.
They can go whistle for it because they're not going to get it from us. And
well, how long have you had it?
Over a year.
Have you put up this complaint board?
No, we haven't done anything with it. It's just been sitting there. I mean, they must have found it on their own.
Can you prove intent to put up this complaint board?
Well, we haven't tried to make people think it's them.
Hey, I'm just it's a asking site, the questions that they're going to ask 6 months
it's
from
a
now
site,
if they drag into court.
It's a site we've had in reserve along with other ones. There's other ones out there, too. And, you know.
So you're working on a complaint-based software which you can put on this
As we said on the website, if someone out there has a site like this that they'd like to run, we will gladly point to them.
Okay.
And again, you know, send us email, and we'd love to see it. OTH@2600.com is the email for this radio show. And Claude, you're motioning. Do you have something to say, or are you just fidgeting?
Just fidgeting.
Okay.
But I could want to speak at any moment.
All right. Well, I'll leave your mic down there so that we'll hear you if you start talking. All right. A bill approved Monday would make a monthly surcharge on phone bills go the way of the rotary dial. This is in New Jersey, and it's about bloody time. Telephone companies now charge customers a fee for having touch-tone telephones. Can you believe
it's going away?
In New Jersey. In some cases, that fee is $1 a month and up to $2 for businesses. State law allowed the surcharge. Just another example of how people get ripped off all the time. They allowed the surcharge as a way for telephone companies to recoup costs associated with installing the once state-of-the-art telephones. Telephones? Telephone switches, I would assume. Yeah. But now that touch-tone phones are ubiquitous, assembly members voted to cut the fee. Isn't that nice?
You know,
it's 2000, and you know people have had touch-tone phones now.
If you refuse to pay that fee, touch-tone dying will still work on your line.
No, that's not true, actually. That's not true, because they can program the switch to ignore touch-tones.
They can, but they don't in at least one experience of someone I know.
Well, I know back in the days of Crossbar, and you can trace it through the history of the show, because we used to have a Crossbar switch, we would have a phone that was not paying for touch tones, but since the Crossbar switch was primitive, it couldn't tell who was paying and who wasn't, so everybody got it. Electronic switching, though, they had the ability to differentiate between those who were paying and those who weren't, and they simply programmed the computer to ignore the touch tones of the people that didn't pay. So,
gosh golly, you had to flip the little switch on your brand new phone that says rotary?
Well, yeah, that's one way around it, but obviously you were being
you
ripped off.
The
you were being denied a service that was a basic service. It went away in New York some years ago. I was surprised to hear that it was still in New Jersey, but it's finally going away. But, you know, people feel like that accomplishes something. It should never have been there to start with. Claude, now you really want to say something.
Yeah, now I am. But I believe you said yourself that that the pulse dialing is converted in their machinery into tones. I mean, it's an entirely spurious.
Different tones. Back in the day of in-band signaling, it would be converted into MF tones.
Right.
Yeah, everything would be touch tone, rotary dial, whatever. It wound up, and they really didn't approve of you using MF tones. It's known as blue boxing.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't think we'll see those, you know, approved anytime soon. Not that they work anyway. Okay, also, just in case you think everything's all peachy keen, citing the potential for consumer rate shock and other concerns, the New Jersey State Board of Public Utilities yesterday put on hold a proposal by Verizon New Jersey to double local phone charges. isn't that great? They take away one charge, and then they do this.
What is rate shock?
I don't know. I think it's what people
in New Jersey... That's when your $20 bill turns into a $40 bill.
No, it's a $20 bill turning into a $10 bill.
At issue is Verizon's request for permission to scrap currently regulated local calling rates, now set at $8.19 a month, in favor of a choice of plans priced at $15, $16, and $17.50 a month. The new rates would remain in effect for 2 years, after which the company would be free to set prices at market levels. So that's progress for you right there.
What a choice.
What a choice indeed. Okay, anything else going on? Isaac, you have a couple of news items over there.
Yes, I was past these little bits and pieces here. Cybercrime treaty targets hackers from MSNBC.
Uh-huh.
Remember way back when I mentioned ILITS?
Okay.
As an obscure acronym in regards to the FBI basically having a big picnic for various law enforcement agencies from Europe, mm-hmm. down in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is the product of that.
All right.
It took a little while to come out with. But,
so what are some of the highlights we have to look forward to?
Well, but basically, let's see. I wish I had a highlighter here. You know FIDOR? Wrote a little tool called Nmap. It's a wonderful little...
I know Nmap, yes.
You know Nmap.
Yes.
Okay, well, he wrote it. And basically, it's a wonderful little tool that allows you to port scan a particular target and see what's available that you could close off.
Tried it on the White House last night.
You tried it on the White House last night? Okay, well...
There's nothing wrong with port scanning the White House. I'm sorry. There isn't.
I'm not even going to touch
that
issue.
How could there be? I mean, basically, you're just looking at their sites, and you know, it's there. It's in the public eye. Right out there. It's not behind passwords or anything like that.
I'm not touching that issue at all.
It's like taking a picture of the White House, for God's sake. We're losing our minds here. You're not causing any traffic on their site. You're not slowing things down. You know, you're not ping flooding them. It's nothing like that.
Well, we can argue that some other time.
I'll show you the results, too.
I don't think I want to know.
You said before the show that you wanted to... Oh, okay. we'll talk about it later. This is
Keep getting further and further incriminated in this. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a tool that both administrators and hackers use. I mean, you can either target it at your own system or target it at someone else's system.
It's a completely legitimate service.
It's a tool. And basically, possessing this thing,
mm-hmm.
out the window, writing it... FIDOR is in trouble, man, if he does another release.
So this is something that's being formulated in Europe now.
This
sounds remarkably similar to DMCA, doesn't it?
Well, it's in that whole vein of seriously limiting.
Possessing a program will be illegal. Possessing a tool will be illegal.
They tried that a year and a half. They tried to have a law very similar to this, outlawing reverse engineering tools and hacking tools, and it got basically laughed off the floor because it wasn't ready yet. They weren't.
Where is
but
this?
Now they...
In
the,
here, States,
in the United
they
States,
they actually laughed that off the floor.
Well, it didn't get very far.
Uh-huh.
And I can look up the references for that. But because when this came out, this is basically word for word what the proposed legislation here was going to be.
Which is reasonable because it was the wonderful United States Justice Department who coaxed all of these European nations into coming up with this this wonderful little treaty.
So now through things like WTO, we'll be forced, even if our Congress doesn't agree, which I think they probably will in the end anyway,
well, the
to go along
to.
With these crazy... Well, the House voted for it?
No, it's a treaty.
I see.
Ratified
by
the Senate.
You know, banning these tools sounds like an unreasonable restraint on trade. I think we should challenge this treaty under the WTO.
Oh boy.
I can't do trade as efficiently if I can't use these tools.
You know, I kind of like that.
All right, you guys work on that.
That's got a possibility. They also mentioned this gun thing here, but we agreed earlier that we're not going to touch that.
We only have a one-hour show.
Okay.
We bring guns into it. It's going to take a few more hours.
And then you also passed me this Ogg Vorbis thing. It's an alternative to the MP3 file format. Now, a lot of people seem to think that MP3 is a wide-open, freebie kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as mentioned on the show, there's a particular university, Fraunhofer, which basically owns the rights via a patent to the encoding technology and everything else. And they seem to think that they're going to charge some fees for this by sometime at the end of the year.
Oh, boy.
$5 per unit for an encoder, 50 cents per hardware sale. Digital download sites will pay 1% of the price charged to the listener, and there is a $15,000 minimum licensing fee for every company. Now,
how does this affect us with our MP3s on?
Well, quite concisely, I'll say they're out of their minds.
Yeah, I think they're out of
their
minds.
If they think they're going to get any of this. I mean, even if you had a judge that was your best buddy, they would you know, there's already a good amount of...
Motion to ignore. We'll just ignore this one for now and see if it comes back later.
But anyway, the idea is that this wonderful Vorbis thing is going to come, and it's going to rescue MP3, and I think it's not going to go very far because it's just another one of those alternate MP3 free open source GPL, you know, not quite going to be
anywhere. I don't know about
anywhere.
That. I mean,
it's not going to happen.
I have to say that I've listened to the Ogg Vorbis compression, and it is, in some ways, better than MP3 compression.
And it's smaller, not that too.
And it's smaller, too. And not that MP3 compression is stellar by any means.
No, and MP3 is
they're both lossy compression schemes, but this one is unhindered by licensing, and they've stated from the beginning that you can do whatever you want with it forever.
Well, I think that's...
Presuming
right,
you abide
right there,
by the GPL restrictions. But admittedly, you know, MP3 is... you're waving my hand.
We only have a few minutes, so we don't have time for a protracted debate on this. We want to take some phone calls.
Well, I'm
Microsoft,
going into a technical argument, but
Microsoft
that's okay.
is at it again with all kinds of security problems. Basically, you probably heard on the news about Microsoft being victim to a hacker.
Yeah, there was a whole hoopla over the weekend where... first, they had this hacker who broke in and stole all of Windows 2000, and then they turned out that they didn't steal any Windows 2000, and then it turned into, well, they didn't modify Windows 2000 before it released, so you don't have any back doors in the things who's paid a...
It turns out they knew about the hacker all along. They were just watching, and
they were watching it, but I find it odd that within the same breath, this person claimed, Microsoft representative claimed, that they were watching him at every turn, but they're not sure if he managed to do anything to what he managed to get. So they were watching him like a hawk, but they don't know what he was doing. Kind of doesn't jive, if you know what I mean.
All I know is that if they actually have sensitive things available on the net, they're even bigger morons than I thought they were.
Well, you get into the corporate intranet and you roll around in
there.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, to have something like that go on and not be detected and to have some harm actually come to the company... I have no sympathy for that kind of thing at all.
They were warned about this kind of thing months ago. So.
Repeatedly. Now, something else also interesting is happening with domain listings. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you do a whois on Microsoft.com,
mm-hmm.
You get all kinds of... you'll see little messages that say things like Microsoft.com is secretly run by Illuminati Terrorist.net. Microsoft.com is at the mercy of Detriment.org. Microsoft.com inspires .copycat.wannabe.subversives.net. Now, I'm told that...
What is this?
Basically, if what you do is you register an address as a name server, and then it shows up on the whois. You have to go through rs.internic.net. So right now, if you're online and you type, if you have the normal whois, whois-h to specify the
specific,
whois server you go through, whois-h rs.internic.net, and then type AOL.com, for instance, is another one, or Microsoft.com, you'll get a list, and you can take a look at it over there. You'll get a list of all the different name servers that have been registered with that, and a lot of them are kind of goofy ones. I haven't tried this myself.
Oh, people are just registering hosts.
Yeah. But apparently this is a new sport that just started in the last week because I've been getting mail about this all over the place.
What good is this?
It's a lot of... If you do a whois and you see all these crazy messages... I don't know.
Needlessly filling the database.
According to the mass media, it's hacking, but who knows. Okay, quickly running out of time, so let's move on really fast here. Let's see. Ralph Nader has spoken out in favor of low-power FM radio stations. Mike, what do you know about that?
Well, as far as I can tell, he's the only candidate to speak out against. They have a bill to prevent the creation of low-power community-based FM radio stations. The FCC opposes the bill, supports the stations. The National Council of Churches opposes the bill and supports the stations. So when people like us and the National Council of Churches agree, it's probably a sign of something.
It is, definitely. That National Association of Broadcasters, National Public Radio, they've lost sight. And they're hogging the bandwidth, and they have no right to.
So listeners should call and write their senators, because if the bill passed the House, it's now going to the Senate. Tell them to vote against the bill to stop low-power FM.
Okay. I'm also told there's a fundraiser on Monday, November 6th in Philadelphia. This is for the people who were arrested during the Republican convention. And, in fact, one of them is our own shapeshifter who does layout for 2600. The trial will be 2 weeks from today. in Philadelphia. We'll have more details for you next week on that. But the fundraiser is taking place next Monday, November 6th, at Fergie's Pub, 1214 Sansom Street in Philadelphia. It goes from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's sponsored by Moms for Justice in support of the R2K Legal Defense Fund. And it should be pretty cool. It's a good way to
How did they
funds.
Manage to capture the shapeshifter?
They had a big net.
Couldn't he have, you know, changed into something else?
Did you see Felicity last week? Did you hear about this?
Why would I watch There's Felicity?
A character of Felicity came on set wearing a 2600 hat on TV. Can you believe that?
Weren't these the same people out of Free Kevin sticker?
Was it them? Yeah, I guess it was them.
Yeah.
Personally, all right, I've gotten lots of letters
Who's
about
over there?
This. I've gotten lots of letters about this. I have no problem with it, but I just think it's very ironic that I assume it's Warner Brothers or Imagine TV. I don't know who they're owned by. They just use this. It's fair use. Fine. Yeah. Fair use. They use it. They have no trouble with the concept when it comes to things like this. But we could easily turn around and accuse them of the same things they're accusing us
of.
Oh,
come on.
Absolutely. Well, look.
It's pretty cool.
I think it's great. I have no problem with it. But I'm saying, if we use their logic, it's wrong. Right? Warner Brothers logic, suing people for coming up with tools to figure out how to play DVDs on different machines. And, if we print a Warner Brothers logo on the next cover of 2600, I bet we'll get a letter. I bet we will.
Stop.
There
don't
is
think
no
we will?
Warner Brothers logic.
Yeah, but there is a Warner Brothers logo, and if that goes in the next issue, I'm sure they'll do so. They're already trying to sue us for various sites that we have.
Didn't they already sue you
General
as
Motors.
Part of the MPA?
No, I'm talking about other companies, you know, just for having the name. So I think, the logo would definitely do it. But again, I have no trouble with it. I just think it's kind of ironic. Okay, we have a phone call we have to make real quick, then we're going to take phone calls. We got about 50 pieces of email about this one, so let's just listen to it and you can hear it for yourself.
Welcome to National Discount Brokers. This call may be recorded and or monitored for quality assurance. For trading, press 1. For a new account kit, press 2. For quotes, press 3. For customer service, press 4. If you are a NetLink Stock Benefit Plan customer, press 5. To hear more about our Buy 4 Free program, where you can buy your own company stock commission-free, press 6. If you would like to hear a duck quack, press 7. If you know your party's extension, press 8, then
yes.
Dial it. To return to the main menu,
yes, you heard right.
Down the line for the next available
customer service. Let's hit 7. See if this is true.
Oh, I really like these guys.
Yeah, yeah. That's been passed around all over the place. I can't imagine what was going through their heads, but that number's gotten very popular on the net. Oh, yes, the number. The number is 1-800-888-3999.
I really like those. Yeah. Wow.
National Discount Brokers. All right. 212-209-2900. Let's quickly take some phone calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. I was listening to the tape recording of the MIT discussion, which was very interesting. The unfortunate thing with that was that you guys weren't able to, you and the lawyer, you brought up the great question of, how is playing this thing on a Linux machine really theft? And you had kept asking him, but also in asking him, the question kept getting morphed into something else, and so he never really answered that question.
Well, it doesn't matter. He wasn't going to answer it anyway.
But he was answering a lot of questions, but also what was difficult, it was unfortunate that we didn't get to hear that answer. It would have been very interesting.
You wouldn't have heard that answer if we tied him up and wouldn't let him leave till he answered the question. Trust me, the whole night he was evading questions like that and just answering with simple, completely meaningless phrases that had nothing to do with the question.
He wasn't very good at this whole why thing.
Yeah, the why thing escaped him.
The interesting thing that you caught and I caught in the same way was that he said, he was talking about, the tens of thousands of, actors and writers and authors and this and that and the other. And I'm like, yeah, and then there are about how many? 3 major corporations in Hollywood that own all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break.
Yeah. Hey, thanks. Thanks for the call. We're going to move on to try to get some more people in. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
New Jersey Bill has a big...
Nice try, Rebel. Listen, if the check clears, we'll see about getting you back on. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
That's not a check to us, by the way. It's the pledge.
Just station.
Yeah. And thanks, everyone, for the pledges. We made over $5,000 last week. Great showing. Thanks, everyone. Yes, you're on the air.
New Jersey Bill.
Oh, come on. You're tying up phone lines that could be used in emergencies. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm just going to turn down my radio. Jack Valenti was making a point that the DMCA protects artists and talking about the Screen Actors Guild and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I spoke to several members of the Screen Actors Guild, and they're all not very happy about it, and they all do not like the Motion Picture Association, and they said it's like a giant film studios club, and I believe recently there was some striking and problems about that, the Screen Actors Guild.
The commercial actors were on strike for a while.
Yes. Oh, commercial actors.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting that the people he claims to be protecting do not like him very much.
Well, I've gotten the same kind of reaction from people in the industry. But, you know, again, that's one thing to say this. These guys have to do something publicly. I mean, mm-hmm. We haven't gotten anyone to come forward and say, yeah, you know, I'm a famous actor and I think this all sucks. We've had some people do that, you know, with Napster, but we really need people to step forward for the DMCA because, believe me, that's going to be a much more crippling blow.
I may be able to help.
All right, good. Well, we'll accept that help, definitely.
Oh, and for the record,
yes.
www.bushsucks.com
uh-huh.
points to the real George W. Bush campaign website.
To the real George W. Bush website?
Yes, yes, it does.
Okay. Well, wait, that's not one of ours, is it?
No.
Oh, okay. All
but
right.
It's kind of interesting.
Wow. Oh, because he registered that. I see.
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks thanks for the call. Actually, you know, I remember. I knew that. I knew that a while ago. Yeah. I don't know. Did Gore Sucks? Does that point anywhere?
How many of these things do you have?
No, it's not mine. This is somebody else. No, he registered it. That's the point. Bush registered bushsucks.com and pointed it to himself. He's worse than me.
Yeah, but you were a little worried. How many
this
of these...
This is startling.
I can't keep track of all this.
This is startlingly accurate.
Yeah. Speaking of elections, we put up a little poll on 2600.com, www.2600.com, asking people for their opinions. We're going to be posting results in a couple of days. Just what people in the hacker world think as far as which candidate is going to represent them the most. So go to the website and submit your response in the next couple of days, and we'll talk about it next week on the air on Election Day. All
right. Well, that's right. We'll be on Super Tuesday.
That's right. Well, it's not going to be at Super Tuesday, I don't think. Let's see if we can take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I was going to bring up that thing about the Ogg Vorbis and the MP3 alternative.
Uh-huh. Yes.
There was a thing a while ago about with the CompuServe GIF or GIF format. And
yeah, I remember that.
Unisys still owns the copyright and the patent, and they were going to try to start collecting on it.
Yeah, and anyways, everybody rebelled and came up with this. I don't know what the alternative was, but
PNG.
Eventually, I guess CompuServe had backed down on it.
Pretty much, they haven't said anything like that in a while. In fact, I haven't heard much from CompuServe at all.
Well, so. it's just not a smart thing to do.
No, it's
you
not.
You end up spending more money trying to prosecute these people than you would ever collect on the fees.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to see, you know, where that goes. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more phone call. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening.
All right. You see how much time you're wasting, Rebel. Even if the check does clear now, I have to express some strong reservations. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have some good news and bad news.
I'll make it fast news.
All right. Bad news is 2600.com is banned from New York City public schools on the web.
Okay, it doesn't surprise me too much, but you know that's why we register other sites with you know different names that go to the same site. You know, you can do the F-word generalmotors.com and get to us. Except we're pointing it someplace else now, but you know what I mean.
And the good news is,
yes.
If you go into the windows.ini file,
uh-huh.
You can just get rid of the program that blocks you from going there.
And you'll be committing a crime. You could be sent to prison and fined $1 million, but that's just the way it is. Hey, this weekend coming up is another hacker conference, Freaknik, in Nashville. Going to try to put in an appearance down there.
In Nashville.
Go to www.freaknik.org, P-H-R-E-A-K-N-I-C, and find out more information about that. We'll be back next week for exciting Election Day coverage. Till then, for everyone, this is Emmanuel. Have a good night.
But if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But no.
On Saturday, November 11th, from midnight to 2 a.m., the women of hip-hop are taking over the Underground Railroad. Join me, DJ Mecca, as we explore the vital female presence in hip-hop culture. We'll have some top female MCs live in the studio, and our special guest DJs will showcase all the hottest ladies on the scene. So tune in to this special edition of the Underground Railroad as we inject some much-needed estrogen into the hip-hop bloodstream. Saturday night from midnight to 2 a.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.
On Saturday, November 18th, the year 2000, from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., WBAI in New York City, 99.5 on your FM dial, is proud to present a Stevie Wonder holiday broadcast. Tune in for some new musical thunder from one of God's greatest and most gifted natural wonders as we move further into a new millennium.
I'm just so thrilled to be here. Over here in America, I'm so glad y'all took me out of Die, homie. I used to live to be 150. Now I die of high blood pressure by the time I'm 52.
Richard Pryor, comedian, social commentator, and one of the most compelling figures of the 20th century, will be the focus of a Midnight Ravers Uncensored special this Friday, November 3rd, from midnight to 3 a.m.
We are gathered here today to celebrate this year of bicentenniality. We're celebrating 200 years of white folks kicking ass.
That's this Friday, November 3rd, from midnight to 3 a.m., only on listener-sponsored non-commercial radio in New York City, WBAI.